This episode of the ABZ Football Podcast is sponsored by Siberia Bar and Hotel on Belmont Street, Aberdeen, located only 30 seconds from the nearest bus stop, taking supporters to Pittodrie for free on match days. Siberia is open 7 days a week, all year round. And to get fired in with our exclusive discount code, head to the bar and quote ABZPOD for a £3 pint of Foster's, a £4 pint of Moretti or Dark Fruits, or £5 for a pint of Fierce or Adake. That's any day of the week, including match days. And if you're with the little ones and are looking for a spot of pre or post match lunch, remember, under 18s are welcome in the bar with an adult, so make a day of it at Siberia. Come on, you Reds.
Red slight of foot there. Bakashina!
Hello and welcome along to episode 165 of the ABZ Football Podcast. I'm Gary Scott, and joining me this evening, fresh off celebrating a top six finish like it's winning the Champions League, is Gavin J. Baxter. Gav, how are you?
I'm okay. I'm somewhere between, your average Rangers fan at the moment, having chucked the league that you just won a week ago. Somewhere between that and, a Dundee fan who's treated clinching top six like it's the best thing that's ever happened.
Yeah, how tin pot are Sevco, eh? Throwing away their title campaign just purely to see if they can drag us back into a relegation playoff.
And they say there's no rivalry.
Exactly, absolutely. No Graham Steele this evening. Graham still living up after Bucky Thistle's thumping win at the weekend, I think, but we'll come on to that a little bit later, I imagine. So, in this week's show, we'll look back on the 0-0 draw with Dundee on Saturday. I don't think that's going to take too long, Gav.
Nope.
We'll check in with the young team and our loanees and the Quines in what's been a relatively busy week down Cormac Park in AB24 way. And then after the break, we'll turn our attentions to our Tennent's Scottish Cup semi-final with Celtic this coming weekend at the National Stadium. But first, Aberdeen 0, Dundee 0, Saturday the 13th of April 2024 at Pittodrie Stadium in the motherfucking cinch. Two changes for Peter Leaven from last week's 0-0 draw at the land of roundabouts. Angus McDonald and Book coming in for Richard Jensen and Junior Hoylett as visitors looked to secure the points that would see them take a top six berth this campaign. The Dons probably the better side in the first half without creating too much in the way of opportunities other than Leighton Clarkson scuffing an effort wide after Miofsky did well to set him up with a goal gaping, but a failure to hit the target, a big, big error at that point, it's fair to say. Dundee coming into late in the half, Cameron's effort from the edge of the box, clipping the bar and heading over. Halftime, 0-0. Second half, Dundee much the better side in the main, Aberdeen with a couple of efforts through Duke that were stopping McCracken, a late chance for Miofsky that he failed to connect with properly. Dundee thought they had won the points through muscle man Curtis Main, but VAR taking a good 3, 4, 5 minutes to clear up an offside that was visible to anyone with a pair of functioning eyes and possibly even those without. Oh, and just to tie things up, Graham Shinney picked up a stupid second yellow card. That means he's already missing next weekend's cup semi-final. He'll now miss at the very least the first post-split game as well. Full-time 0-0, and with news coming from Fir Park that Motherwell had scored an injury time equaliser. Wild, wild scenes of tin pottery in the away end. All jokes aside though, fair fucks to Tony Docherty for lifting Dundee to a top six finish after years of being Scottish football's yo-yo. For the Dons, with St Johnstone losing, Ross County picking up a victory, perhaps a shock victory on Sunday afternoon. It does mean that we're maybe not quite as comfortable as we were prior to the weekend. What's that saying? Where we're sitting now in the league? I can't even remember. My mind is
point of order. Were these notes typed up prior to today's games? Because it says Ross County losing this weekend and we are now 8 points clear of County. Now I'm pretty sure that's not correct.
That's not correct. I typed them this morning, fully expecting I wouldn't have to come back and edit them, and here we are. So we're 5 points clear of Ross County in the playoff spot now with only 5 league games of this miserable, miserable campaign left to go. So that bottom six makeup also sees us with Hibs, Motherwell, St Johnstone, Ross County and Livy. Now, for there to be a proper home and away balance, we should be due to travel to Hibs, Perth and Ross County with home games against Motherwell and Livy. But that would leave us with 20 away games and 15 at home. So don't be surprised. I think looking at the way the fixtures are, or sort of the way that the number of home games that other teams in the bottom six have played so far, don't be surprised if County, St Johnston or Hibs are sent to Aberdeen for a third time this season. Of those sides, it's probably most likely to be Hibs or St Johnston, I would imagine. Fun times all round. On the data front from the game, possession 56% to 44% in favour of the home side. Shots 12 to 18 in favour of visitors. Shots on target 5 to 2. Expected goals 1.01 for Aberdeen to 1.11 for Dundee. So Gav, I mean, let's be honest. The game itself, not exactly an awful lot to write home about, was it?
No, not a vintage display from either team necessarily. You know, I felt like in the first half we had played a bit better than we did against Ross County, both with and without the ball. I thought we were quite intense in our pressing game, and going forward, I thought we looked, you know, decent, especially on Duke's side of the wing. I think by minute 30 or so, like all of the right-sided Dundee players, right wing back, right winger, right centre back are all on a booking. So you're just thinking, let's just keep feeding the ball to Duke, and you know, before you know it, we could even possibly be playing a team with 10 men, or they're going to be so nervous to touch him, he's going to be able to have the run of that wing and create chances for Mionski. So in typical Aberdeen fashion, we stopped supplying the ball to him. And then the second half, you know, I thought Dundee came into it much more and felt, leaving the stadium, I felt like a draw was pretty fair. But then when I go back and watch the highlights, it's pretty much all Dundee when it comes to the clear-cut chances, and they'll probably be wondering how they didn't come away with a victory. And then when they got the news that Motherwell had equalised and all they needed to do was hang on for the point, I felt like the game was... Dundee were never in danger of Aberdeen getting a late winner. So disappointing to once again feel like we'd left 2 points on the table.
We'll try and talk positives really quickly. Positives, it is another clean sheet. That's 3 in our last 4. We do make it 4 unbeaten as well, which is certainly, if nothing else, steady the ship. And again, I typed these notes up earlier on and ensure that we probably don't get dragged into that playoff spot, but we just need to be mindful of that. I think the bookies have us at 33 to 1 to be dragged into 11th. I think it's like County odds on, St Johnston just slightly higher than odds on, and then us on 33 to 1. So I think it does become unlikely still, but it's just become a little bit closer for comfort than it ideally could have been. What could have happened if a goal at Livingston last week had stood? Anyway, those clean sheets, though, in what is really a damning indictment on the previous set of incumbents in charge down Pittodrie Way this season. Peter Leaven is now responsible for 43% of our clean sheets in the league this season.
Yeah, that's not a great statistic for anyone, although it's a great stat for Peter Leaven as a head coach of the team. I wouldn't say this was a defensive masterclass. Anyways, we were scrambling. You know, you've got Harv Cameron hits the bar in the first half, anchoring off with a great goal line clearance. A number of opportunities being presented to Dundee by our defenders, principally. And yeah, I mean, it's a clear and obvious offside, and why that took 4 minutes when I watched it in real time on SportsCena and said, yeah, he was offside quite clearly.
Yeah, it was hard for us at the game at the Reg end to know, but all I could think at the time was, how on earth is Roos flapped at that? But
well, I mean, I wasn't thinking that, because that's just the norm. Not to mention then Kel Roos in jumping over Bakayoko, jumping over Curtis Main's rebound. So thankfully we're spared our blushes on that one. It's a clean sheet, but it's by no means a clean sheet we've earned through defensive mastery.
No, absolutely. On leaving just quickly, you know, I just said there, he's, if nothing else, the ship has definitely been steady, that's fair to say, since he's come in. You know, as I said there, we're unbeaten in 4, 4 out of the last 5. I have seen a lot of people clamouring this week for him to remain part of the coaching setup under Jimmy Tilleen. What's your kind of thoughts on that?
I think Jimmy Tilleen might be reconsidering that contract offer right now, if I'm being quite honest with you. If you go on the basis that he wasn't so keen when we were, our position was looking questionable. So all being well, and that we are remaining in the Scottish Premiership and Jimmy does come in. I think I've said before, yeah, I'd advocate for Peter Leaven to remain as part of the coaching staff. He seems like he's a guy that has grown a fondness or a care for the club, and that comes through the way that he's talked about it since being caretaker. It seems the players do react to him, and I think it'll be a valuable piece of the makeup at Aberdeen. Yeah,
we'll maybe touch a little bit more on the Tillian stuff in a minute or two, but it's also part of the reason you're taking that view, because it would appear that Tillian's going to take two of his assistant managers from Elfsborg with him as well. So it's going to be an entirely new kind of coaching setup with no experience outside of, well, on a coaching level, no experience outside of Sweden. We'll talk about their assistant managers in the episode that will drop at the point at which Tillian actually fucking signs on the dotted line. It's announced, it's sitting there in the chamber ready to be fucking shot. But is it
assuming he is still taking Dave Carman's calls?
Yeah. Is it important for you? Do you think it's important that there is somebody within the coaching setup who has been around the Scottish game a little bit? So just so they've got that level of familiarity with perhaps the way that certain clubs may try to set up, just the circumstances and the kind of environments in which you go into. Do you think that's important?
You know, barring Jimmy coming in and deciding to hire some absolute weapons like some of our previous managers have, you know, if Alan Russell gets the shout, then I'll be kicking off. But I'll generally speaking, you know, respect however Jimmy wants to approach it. And if that's an entirely new backroom staff that he knows and trusts, then I trust that he is doing that for the right reasons. But I would simply, especially in the first year, I'd advocate for, I think Graham talked about this last week, just having someone who knows the players on a personal level, on a professional level, knows what they can do, what they can't do, and just like some of the quirks and intricacies of Scottish football, someone to be able to act as a sounding board for Tillian, I think would be extremely valuable for him to have. So I would definitely advocate for Peter Leaven to remain part of the setup.
I don't know if there was any real major surprises, were there, in that starting 11 that Leaven went with this time?
I felt like I felt Dante was going to get a run out.
Well, we'll talk about this now. Yeah. Because with Graham Shinney being out of the Cup semi-final next week, which we knew, Povara's had very little game time in recent weeks. He's had very little game time since the Motherwell debacle, I think, the 3-3 draw, when he got hooked early doors alongside Shea DeMorris. Were you surprised, therefore, that you didn't see Povara being given more of a run on Saturday to try and get him up to speed, given you have to assume it'll be Povara that will come into the team in place of Shinney on Saturday?
You would think so, for sure. And I mean, given how well Dante did when he came on against Ross County, we had another game against Livingston where the midfield battle was not won. We were lacking creativity. And you know, I thought this was a game there to be won. I think Dante offers you a bit more than Conor Baden does. I understand why Shinney starts, because Graham Shinney starts any game, no matter what. He's obviously one of, you know, I know Warnock, and we can take everything Warnock says with a massive pinch of salt, but you know, he's probably correct in one thing, in that Graham Shinney is one of the outright scrappers on the team. And maybe Peter Leaven looked at this game thinking McCowan, Cameron, he's going to need someone in there to be combative against them. But for the game to have gone on the way it did in the second half, and for us to not have any real foothold in the game or offering up any kind of threat, to leave the subs as late as he did and leave bringing Dante Povara on as late as he did, I thought was surprising and not something I wanted to see. Before I say it again, I think Dante's been one of the bright sparks of this season, and I think he should get a lot more game time, especially when we're not seeing a huge amount out of really any of our midfielders right now.
Yeah, we're definitely not. And especially when, you know, it is incredibly likely now that Conor Baden is not here next season.
No.
So why we're continuing to necessarily play him when we know that Dante Povara, chances are, will be here. He signed off to that extended contract earlier in the season. And Dante's still relatively inexperienced, and it feels like these are the games, especially now, that would be good to help him build that level of experience. Talk about that midfield, because again, Cameron McCowan, once again, standouts for Dundee. A real contrast to our centre midfield as well, which just looks so laboured, so off the pace, so, I don't know, like two or three steps behind the entire time. You know, Cameron McCowan, these boys ran, chased, harried with intensity all game. It's kind of no surprise in a way to see that Dundee have done so well this season when you've got guys like that in the centre of the park, providing just that energy and engines across the pitch.
Yeah, I mean, they're good players. And I mean, I think the lad Mo Silla in the first half did the same, as did then, I think it was Boateng they brought on at halftime. Yeah, there was a lot of energy, a lot of combativeness and from Dundee. And the one thing they also then have on top of that is that McCowan and Cameron could go on and create chances for their teams.
Yeah.
On another day, you know, Cameron gets a couple of goals perhaps. Yeah, they're good players. I mean, I wouldn't necessarily think we'd have the budget to go about having maybe two of them. But in the summer, if the money's there, I'd be definitely advocating is my big word tonight.
It really is.
Yeah, I'd be endorsing the recruitment team to look at least one of them. Cameron really impressed me yesterday.
Yeah, I thought he had a good game yesterday.
Luke McCowan's really... always been the one that's caught my eye, but Cameron yesterday was really good.
Yeah, I thought they were both excellent yesterday as well. The game itself, which we've already said, there's not a huge amount to talk about. Let's really quickly talk about Ryan Duncan's cameo. Shaden Morris took a lot of stick for his performance against Motherwell under Neil Warnock. And deservedly so. He was absolutely honking that evening. And I really, really hate to turn our attention onto a young lad that's come through our system. But that one for me was right up there with Morris's performance against Motherwell. It was so bad. I'm kind of not quite sure why he came on ahead of Junior Hoylett, to be honest. I mean, Hoylett has also not been great in recent weeks since Neil Warnock's left. I wonder why. Got to be big concerns about Ryan Duncan's kind of development at the moment, hasn't there? He's just not really kicked on at all.
I mean, following on from the Dean Campbell, Connor McLennan formula, he's got about 70 more games left in the tank before we figure out that he's not good enough. I wouldn't say it was Shaden Morris levels because he didn't contribute to three goals conceded and he did put in one half-decent cross that Duke got on the end of.
Fair.
So I wouldn't quite go that far, but yeah, it was not a good start. And I mean, like from the first moment, like he lost the ball to an opponent and it just seemed like his shoulders slumped and nothing went his way. I remember when Duncan had that really good spell at Peterhead and he came back and he was in the team for the group stages of the League Cup and featured on and off. And I thought, like, this is a really proper modern attacking player. Looks like he's got a bit of everything. And since then, and in some ways through no fault of his own, because Robson shifted his position game-to-game basis. But this season, he's not really had a look in at all. And when he has come into the team, he's not delivered in any way. And he's still 20 years old. You know, potentially, there's maybe a chance for him to go out on loan next season and see if we do have anything there. But I think I've struggled in the past with Aberdeen giving too much time to players that come through our academy. When if he had come in the summer as a new player and we saw this from him, we just say not enough, get rid of. I think sometimes we're a little bit too nice as a club and it might be time to be a bit more ruthless. And maybe that's what a new foreign coach will bring.
Yeah, absolutely. Talking about homegrown players, I actually thought Jack McKenzie had a good game yesterday. And I know you're not convinced, but I actually do think Jack McKenzie is starting to turn in more consistently decent performances week on week at the moment. I thought he was quite possibly our best player yesterday.
It's a good recovery run to stop the effort from Curtis Main that leads to the throw-in, that almost leads to the Dundee disallowed goal. I can't remember off the top of my head much going on. I thought that it's a funny one because like football is so subjective and you'll get all kinds of different opinions because all around me I heard people slating McDonald yesterday. I thought Angus was good.
It was all right.
I think with the ball perhaps at times a little bit sloppy, but I mean a great clearance off the line in the second half. I thought did his defensive duties very well. Devlin going forward, not bad. What he's doing in our penalty area in the second half, when he does the dummy, and
that was another brain fart moment from Devlin. You're like, oh no,
absolutely. No. I mean, I think I saw in the highlights he's readjusting his mask as if that was the problem. And Stefan Gartman, man, I mean, I feel like the game goes into slow motion when he's in possession.
Yeah,
and also for a defensive player, like I remember we talked with Mark Reynolds about this that he. For him, it was all about getting in front, like reading the game and not necessarily wanting to tackle or get involved. But I don't remember Mark Reynolds ever looking visibly afraid of physical engagement in the way that Stefan Gartman appears to be. So I think, long story short, I think Jack McKenzie and I have been all our best defenders yesterday.
Yeah. The thing I like about McKenzie, the thing I do like about him, and I think that Tilleen will like this about him, he's happy to get up the line. Like he's more than willing to get forward and bomb forward, and he's actually had pretty decent attacking threat in the main. up there if we could just work on his decision making a little bit. I think that for all of our doubts, in particular you, I think there might be something in there with Jack McKenzie if he could get an extended run in the team and just try and really nail that position down and try and develop. He's got a lot of the tools there to make it in the Scottish game, I think. He's got a decent build about him, decent pace. Just needs that experience. Sometimes he gets his body shape all wrong. There was a moment in the second half. Was it the second half?
Yeah. No, it was the first half.
Where the ball got played inside him and his body shape was just all wrong. And it was almost very reminiscent about what happened in Frankfurt when he gave away the penalty. Like, he just got his body shape all wrong. But I think that comes with experience as well. I thought McKenzie was decent enough yesterday.
The shirt is his for the time being anyway, and it will depend how the new coach sees it. If a left back is top of his priority list, I mean, because McGarry's not going to cause much in the way of competition. Obviously, Johnny Hayes, you'd expect, is going to retire at the end of the season. So it's his to lose right now, undoubtedly. Yep. The consistency, as I've said before, he needs to just, you know, put together a string of consistent good performances to win over the doubters.
Indeed.
Myself included.
Only 4 wins at home in the league.
It's shocking.
In this regular season, it's a joint third worst record in the league. I mean, it's no surprise that you're at the wrong end of the table when you see stats like this. We've only scored 19 goals at home as well out of, 16 games? It's fair to say that the home support has hardly got our money's worth in terms of entertainment and or results this campaign.
No, certainly not. No.
When you think as well, we've won the same number of games away from home as we have at home this season. And we think under Glass and then Goodwin for a big period of time, we couldn't win a game away from home for fucking love nor money.
The way of looking at it is we're as good away from home as we are now at home. And that's all we wanted under Glass and Goodwin.
if we'd been as good away from home as we were at home under probably Goodwin especially, we'd have been flying, but we weren't. Yeah.
No, I mean, you look at that bottom six just in general, how all of these teams have, not one of them has won 10 games.
Yeah, I know.
Fucking shite. Honestly.
And I know this is a proper, like, those in glass houses shouldn't throw stones, but just how fucking rank rotten does that top six look, by the way? Is that, by some stretch, the worst top six in living memory?
I'd have to go back and consult the record books, but
yes.
I mean, all I say is I look at that bottom six, think that looks proper dog shit. So
I know. Right, that was miserable on Saturday. I just want the season to end. Unfortunately, Ross County's result today just means that it just doesn't quite feel quite as comfortable as it had been a couple of days ago.
It is funny how 7 points clear with 6 feels secure, and now 5 with 5 feels like we're now back on shaky ground, and we're all probably looking forward to, maybe the wrong way of expressing it, but we're all just now waiting to see what the fixture computer comes up with and when we'll be back up to Dingwall.
I'm sure it'll be fine. But Gav, top dawn for you then on Saturday?
This is hard work. Genuinely thought Angus was good. So I'm going to say that's McDonald.
You can do anything but give it to Jack McKenzie. I honestly
thought Angus did really well, and I was just perturbed by the people that were slating him around me. Still nothing changes my mind. He's our best defender, and we'd have been in a better position if we played him more.
Quite possibly. Right. For me, it was Jack McKenzie, so let's move on. Kind of latest news this week. Despite the rumour, the innuendo, the conjecture.
Right, guys, assurances to us all in a pub on Wednesday evening that it was done, and motherfucking done.
It is done. It's just taking its sweet time to be fully done. As of the time of recording.
It's well done.
Yeah. It's been popped in the oven just to keep it warm. At the time of recording, still no sign of any white smoke emanating from Cormac Park, signalling the cooking of a succulent meal of IKEA meatballs. It would appear that we're currently in a holding pattern of waiting to ensure that A, we are actually secure from relegation, that B, Elfsborg can get a new manager announced, which all hinges on C, Aalborg securing their promotion back to the Danish top flight, which will then free up Oscar Hjulmark to make the move to replace Tillin at Elfsborg. And Aalborg are making a right royal prick of things, as it turns out, with defeat at Hobro on Friday night, meaning that we have to wait just that little bit longer. But they do face off against third place Kolding next Sunday. That's the 21st. A win for Aalborg would see them then secure promotion, and then hopefully the entire deck of cards can then... No, that's not the metaphor I want to go for. Never mind. Anyway, interesting. One thing that popped out during the course of this week was the influence of BPTC Sports in all of this. In case you missed our post on this on X earlier in the week, so you might remember BPTC Sports are the German consultancy firm that we had in doing the review of our footballing operations, of which we've not seen any actually kind of findings yet, but never mind. That firm is headed up by Bernhard Peters, and it was BPTC who had Jimmy Tillin up at the top of the shortlist to replace Barry Robson. Fine. But this is then where it gets interesting, because Bernhard Peters is part of a consortium called SSE22, which also includes former Aston Villa player and Germany international Thomas Hitzlsperger in its ranks. And SSE22 bought a majority shareholding in Aalborg in March 2023. So BPTC have their fingers and in at least two of the pies that currently surround the Dons' search for a new manager. Having recommended Tillin to the Dons, it's Aalborg's manager who's now being tipped to move to Elfsborg to backfill Tillin. And this is maybe now where it makes loads more sense, Gav, about why things are taking just that little bit longer than your typical hiring of a manager. Aalborg are fine to let Hjalmark go to Elfsborg, but only once their promotion is sorted. Elfsborg are happy to be picking up a highly rated young manager to replace Tillin. Hjalmark's only 31. Seems to be doing an incredible job at Aalborg, it's fair to say. And then that then allows BPTC to fulfill their brief to Aberdeen eventually when Tillin comes to Aberdeen. So everyone hopefully ends up happy as a result. It's just taking its sweet ass fucking time to get there. But one also has to wonder, Gav, do you think, is this maybe the start of some sort of weird loose relationship forming out of this little chain?
What, between Aberdeen, Elfsborg and Aalborg?
Yeah, like some sort of like just actual proper fucking succession planning going on.
If they're happy to share us with Atlanta, Juventus and Reykjavik.
It's quite curious, isn't it, the whole thing?
Sorry, what? So BPTC.
Yeah.
And what was the other one? SSE22, which I thought was a high-speed rail network.
Monorail.
I mean, it definitely sounds that people are getting their money's worth out of this whole operation. That's for one thing. I guess this is the dark and murky world of football negotiations and football ownership in the modern era. It's a lot of moving parts for sure, and it's frustrating that you go from thinking that you're going to have a manager in the door to having to wait for a Danish second division team to clinch their promotion before everything can be, all the mechanisms can be released and Jimmy comes to Aberdeen. I've accepted from the minute that it sounded like he was going to be the guy, that he probably won't be here till the summer, so if he's any sooner than that, I'll take it as a bonus. Yeah, I mean, I'd be definitely in favor of a partnership with some Scandinavian clubs, definitely. But I've got a feeling that might not come to fruition in the same way as our strategic partnerships with Atlanta and Reykjavik, and yeah. I guess Juventus never did really pick us up.
No, quite possibly not.
Shame.
One does have to wonder now just how much longer it will take for Tillin to be actually announced in one shape or another, as the 26th individual to have taken permanent charge of the Dandies and only our second from outside the British Isles. Do you want to put a wager on that what happened this week?
Well, you were pushing like fuck to record the episode on Thursday, saying it was definitely going to happen. So we're in the future. What is it? Jimmy Tillin. I mean, yeah, it's nearly 4 days now since you told us he was hired. I would expect. So what did you say Aalborg need to do? They need to beat
their opponents beat
on the 21st, so next Sunday.
Yeah, if Aalborg beat them next week, then they're done, I think. They're pretty much there.
So then your manager will be off on the piss for a few days, and then that's when he'll sign up with Elsborg. I'm going to say it'll be in May.
Okay, there we go. Imminent.
By which point...
the deck of cards falls.
There is a six-pointer in Dingwall, which Jimmy Teal will be watching very, very carefully.
let's move on to talk about Loan Watch. Let's hopefully things get sorted out this week and we can all just stop talking about it and actually have a manager appointed. But never mind, not a Loan Watch. Kieran Aguena at Park Thistle came off the bench for the final 3 minutes as Thistle sort out a goalless draw in Kirkcaldy to all but end Wraith's title challenge. Wraith, you had one fucking job. That's all you had to do.
Shite.
Fucked it right up. Fucking hell. Never mind. Anyway, Alfie Babbage, Kelty Hearts, another start for him. Another 90 minutes under his belt as Kelty beat Stirling Albion by 1-0 in League One. Kelty still with an outside chance of making the final playoff position in League One. Finlay Marshall, Edinburgh City, he played the full 90 minutes as Edinburgh City's miserable season continues to limp towards the finish line. A 2-0 defeat at Palmerston to Marvin Bartley's Gaming Queen of the South. Dylan Lobbin lasted 68 minutes as Forfar lost at Peterhead by 2-1 in League Two. Alfie Stewart at Peterhead came off the bench for Peterhead at just about the same time that Lobbin departed in the same game. Aaron Reid, Adam Emsley, and Kevin Hanratty at Formartin United. Remember, for ages we've been like, what's been happening with Kevin Hanratty? Turns out he's been at Formartin for God knows how fucking long. Good of the club to keep everybody updated on that one. Anyway, starts for all three of them as Formartin hosted Rothes. Aaron Reid notching a hat-trick in just 24 minutes as Formartin routed the aforementioned Rothes by 5-1. Finlay Murray at Turriff United, another start, another 90 minutes, Turriff with a 0-0 draw at Lossiemouth. Tom Ritchie for Bucky Thistle. Ritchie starting as Bucky beat Devon Vale by 6-1 to keep up their title challenge. Brendan Hamilton, another start for him, another 90 minutes for him as Banks of D kept up their outside chance at the title with a big 2-1 win at Brora Rangers. Blair McKenzie, Huntley, another start, another 90 minutes for him. Huntley finishing their season with a 0-0 draw with Nairn County. Jaden Richardson, an unused sub as Colchester, won by 3-2 at Crawley Town. Anthony Stewart not in the squad once again as the Milton Keynes Dons went down to a 4-1 defeat at home to Mansfield. No danger of automatic promotion for the Dons of Milton Keynes variety this season. Vicente Bajowin at Emin started, scored a beauty from just inside the opponent's half, but to no avail. Emin beaten by 3-1 by MVV Maastricht. Let's call it Maastricht. And Vinny subbed after 77 minutes in that one. And then on to look at how Papi Habib Gay got on, because I haven't done it yet.
Where is it? Where is the
elite
Syrian in this
whole thing?
Where are
they? They were beaten 2-0 by Molde. Gay started, booked
on the hour mark,
and then
played the 90.
Played the whole 90 minutes, picked up a FOTMOB rating of 6, which is the lowest of anyone that played. There we go. On to the young team. A sobering 6-1 defeat for them at Cormac Park on Friday evening against their Youth Cup final opponents, Sevco Youth. Cammy Wilson with a solitary strike for the Dons. And that's enough about that one, I think. And not the Quines. Gav, you were at the Balmoral on Sunday afternoon.
Yep.
Hamilton Aki is visiting. Enjoyable game?
Yeah, good fun. I've definitely seen the Quines play better. The first half, two bad goals that they concede, and I think when you look at SWPL1 in the against column, it's 77, and you can understand why, because some of the defending was pretty diabolical, truth be told. But Clint Lancaster made a couple of subs at halftime. They made a real difference, and there's three things that are guaranteed in this world, Gary. There's death, taxes, and Bailey Hutchison scoring for Aberdeen.
And Jimmy Tilleen arriving at Aberdeen.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, Bailey Hutchison with another double. So let's quickly rattle through it. Melissa Reid getting the visitors ahead after just 5 minutes. Fan Ogilvy with her fourth goal of the season just 3 minutes later to square things up. GRR then poking the visitors ahead before halftime. And as you just touched on there, Clint Lancaster making two changes at the interval that saw Lindbeck and Broderick replaced by Lewis Edwards and Hannah Innes. The Dons coming back on level terms through Hutchison on 55 minutes before then. She sealed the points with a fine back-heeled effort. That's enough to seal the points. And as you just touched on there, I mean, the Dons now firmly taking a grip on the best of the rest tag in the bottom six. Now on to 31 points for the season as well from the 25 games played. That's the best total of any campaign for the Quines since their return to the top flight, and 1 point to the good on last season's final tally with 7 games remaining. So Clint Lancaster's got to be delighted, you would imagine, with how things have gone this season.
In terms of the season, I can expect he will be very happy. But with the day today, I think he spoke about his post-match comments that it was a game of two halves and there were things to like and there were things to not like. I think Hannah Innes and Lewis Edwards came on at halftime and they made a real difference. Bailey Hutchison, like I say, coming up with the goods. They're led by Ailey Shore and Hannah Stewart. There's a lot of good things about the team, but just need to work on that defence and maybe being a little bit smarter with the ball when they're ahead. But yeah, it was good fun. It's always good entertainment going to the Balmoral and going to watch the women's team. And just from a personal perspective, I mean, the Hamilton Accies manager was an absolute gobshite. So it was class to see him lose and for our team to just get it right up him. I don't know if you've mentioned, but they did. Hamilton Accies had a player sent off late on in the game.
Yes. Uh-huh.
And sent off for a second yellow. She'd received the first yellow roughly 5 seconds earlier.
Excellent.
I don't even remember what necessarily happened, but she was mouthing off at the ref, gets the yellow, continues to mouth off, and then gets the second yellow.
Ah, maybe that's not the... Is that the stupidest red card you've seen this weekend?
This weekend? It's close competition.
There we go. We'll leave it there, I think. But yeah, no, fair play to Clinton Lancaster and everybody involved. That's a good bit of progress this season, and hopefully, it was said earlier on, they can just hopefully kick on from that in the next campaign as well. It's a very, very, very young squad still that Lancaster has at his disposal. He's also not been helped with injuries this season. There was obviously the big injury to Faye Kirby early doors.
Missing Phoebe Muddy as well, who's away on Scotland under 16's duty. She's a big player for the team.
Yeah, and then Laura Holden, who started the season really well as well after moving here. ABZ sponsor.
Nadine Hansen, captain.
Yeah.
Unavailable.
They've suffered quite a bit. So yeah, fair play. Well done to Clinton and the girls there in getting up the table and reaching that points tally already this season. Right. That'll do us, I think, for the first half, will it, Gav?
Yep.
Lovely stuff. Join us after break where we will come back to talk about a trip to Hampden for a Scottish Cup semi-final against Celtic on Saturday at lunchtime. Looking for the best donuts in the northeast of Scotland? Look no further than Dough & Co. Made fresh every day and topped right in front of you at their 40-seater cafe on Belmont Street in the heart of Aberdeen. They make the perfect gift or the perfect pre-match stop-off with a full selection of bagels and hot and cold drinks. If you're listening from home, why not place your order for one of their Dough & Co. stops? There are over 28 drop-off locations across the region, delivering through the northeast on a weekly basis. Follow at Your Donut Shop across socials to stay up to date. Come on, you Reds. Welcome back to the ABZ Football Podcast. Before we get on to talk about Saturday's semi-final at Hampden, just a quick shout-out again to those of you making your contributions to the KOFI.com Bean and Coffee Fund. Thank you. Much appreciated. It does just help us cover the costs and everything associated with the podcast more than anything else. If you would like to make a donation, head on over KO-FI.com/ABZ Football Podcast. The link is in the description. So, Gav, Saturday lunchtime. A third trip to Hampden this season awaits as the Dons look to force our way into a first Scottish Cup final appearance in 7 years as we take on league leaders and current cup holders Celtic in the first of the semi-finals this weekend. The Dons and Celtic having faced each other a total of 32 times in the Scottish Cup to date, 9 wins for the Dons, 7 draws and 16 defeats in that time. Our first Scottish Cup semi-final since the COVID interrupted 2020 iteration, which also saw us face off with Celtic in the semi-final, a 2-0 defeat in that one at an empty Hampden Park. Our last win over Celtic at the semi-final stage coming in April 1983, a 1-0 win as the Dons would then go on to regain our Scottish Cup following the glory of Gothenburg in May of 1983. Our last win against Celtic in this competition coming 10 years ago, that was that famous 2-1 win.
It.
Baby at Parkhead that saw us all certain we were about to win the cup double. Indeed, we've only won one of our last eight Scottish Cup semi-finals. This season, we've played Celtic three times, two defeats and a draw from those three. Celtic coming at this one in decent form, unbeaten in their last six, a 3-0 win over St Mirren on Saturday, keeping them at the top of the table for the time being. And then, of course, with the result in Dingwall today, it's all now very much in Celtic's hands about the title this season. The return of Rio Hatate has been a big boost to Celtic in recent weeks. Cal McGregor also stepping up his return to fitness, coming off the bench for the last 20 minutes on Saturday. Daizan Maeda, though, looks like he's out for the rest of the season. Rodgers sticking with his 4-3-3, expected to be Ida or Kyogo as the number nine, flanked by either by Kuhn and then either Palmer or Yang, probably. Matt O'Reilly, their top goal scorer this season with 13 in the league. Adam Ida with a decent return, it's fair to say, of 7 goals from 10 league games, as much as we derided him arriving from our English team, Norwich City. Liam Scales out of the team with an injury as well, which saw Mike Naroki come back in against St Mirren. He was then replaced by Stephen Welsh, so perhaps some injury challenges at centre-half for Celtic. And it's definitely a backline that can be got at if you try to. We, of course, will commit this one as massive underdogs. Graham Chenet suspended. Gav, it's almost hard a little bit to muster up. And this is such a damning indictment about where our season is at this moment in time, that trying to get yourself up for a Scottish Cup semi-final at Hampden feels quite difficult at this moment in time.
Yeah, this is kind of in part why the last two results in particular have frustrated me. The 0-0 draws with both Livingston and Dundee is the kind of lack of urgency in some of our play. And it's just that what I felt was a need to be going into this game with some momentum behind us and some real good feeling both in the team and in the support, because, you know, we're going to be majorly up against it, as we would be if we're going to Glasgow to play either side of the Old Firm, regardless of how well we are doing. So to be coming into the game with that sort of feeling of just, we all want the season to end, and there's still this chance of a trophy, like of glory. It's still there to be won, but it's just really hard to see it happening. It's going to take one hell of an effort to beat Celtic.
Yeah, I saw putting that to one side for a second, I saw an absolutely mental take on Twitter this evening, which, you know, to be fair, is the home of mental takes, but nearly kind of suggesting that maybe we shouldn't win the Scottish Cup because that would just cause us a problem by being in like European group stages next season.
Like, who do we think we are? Some mid-table English team?
Yeah, I was just like, no, I'll gladly take the complete inconvenience of the European group stages. And I say the inconvenience, and let's be honest, they're fucking great fun as supporters.
It was great. I'd kind of like to see us win the Scottish Cup, if I'm quite honest.
Yeah, I'd probably right by now give my left bollock to win the Scottish Cup. It's been fucking far too long. And I'll take whatever necessary inconveniences on top of my left bollock being given away to see it happen. So let's not talk about stuff like that ever again, please. I mean, I guess it's our third trip to Hampden this season. We've weirdly not really shown up at Hampden in the first two encounters we've been there this season. We were fortunate, it's probably fair to say, in the semi-final against Hibs in the League Cup. I know some people will disagree with me. I just don't think we showed up in the League Cup final at all. I don't think we really gave Rangers much of a game in that one. I don't think we really tried to win the game outright. I mean, what do you want to see us do in terms of personnel, in terms of approach on Saturday? I mean, personnel-wise, we're pretty restricted. Our squad is limited. We all know this. But what do you want to see Levine try to do in terms of approach?
Levine.
Did I see Levine?
Yeah, different guy.
Oh, Christ. Yeah. He also never won anything. So.
Yeah, he won very little at Hampden as well, to be fair. You know what? I had a little look through the Celtic's results this season because I know they've suffered their share of defeats, and I had thought I'll look at who's beaten them, who's done well against them. It's generally been Kilmarnock and Hearts and Rangers in Scottish football, and those are teams that will be coming at them with pace down the flanks. They'll have, you know, decent physical strikers that will give their defenders a real hard time, and they'll be really well structured, well shaped in defense out of them when they're without the ball. So given that information and then looking at our squad, I think I know what I'd like us to do.
What would you like us to do?
The simple fact is that I don't think we have the personnel to do it, which is to, you know, get the ball out wide, get crosses into the box, and
give their defenders a real
physical battle.
So what you're telling me is it's the Shade the Monster Redemption arc.
What's Johnny Hayes up to these days? Get the boots back on, Johnny. Time to shine is now. You know what? I mean, the jokes aside, I mean, I guess Peter Leeman can look at the game plan we implemented against Celtic at Pittodrie, which worked out pretty damn well. I think we were unlucky in a lot of ways to not win that game. But also I have to factor in playing Celtic at Pittodrie and playing Celtic at Hampden as two completely different animals. So I'm not really sure what I would be advising us to do, if I'm being quite honest with you.
Yeah. Has Brendan Rodgers lost a Scottish Cup tie?
No, they were on course for another treble when he left for Leicester City.
That's right, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, so he's never lost a Scottish Cup tie, I think.
I think so, Kilmarnock beating them in the League Cup was his first cup defeat as a Celtic manager.
I think you're right. So, well, it has to happen sometime, doesn't it?
It does.
And what better time for it to happen?
And I mean, you know, we need to start like balancing out those that record. I mean, you told me there just a second ago that we've played 32 times, won 9, drawn 7, and lost 16. I mean, I feel like I've watched us get beat 32 times by Celtic in my lifetime alone.
Yeah,
so I'm a little bit stunned by that stat.
You mean just in Scottish Cups?
I mean, just in Scottish Cup games. Yes, I mean that whole spell with Craig Brown, and that felt like we played them every week and got scudded.
4-0, just a standard 4-0 result.
I mean, yeah, there's the crumbs of comfort I'm taking from it is that I know that Nikola Vujadinovic can't line up for us this time.
Well,
or Stephen Smith, or, you know, Gerald. And who was the referee?
Gerald played one of those games?
Oh, she must have done. Maybe he didn't, but I feel like there was a time when all of our absolute dross centre backs were playing against Celtic in the cup. I mean, maybe not. No, Martin McGee would never have gone as far.
No.
And the first thing Craig Brown did when he came in was tell Gerald Lifel that maybe he should take up a trade. You're probably right.
I'm gonna have a double challenge.
I know Graeme Schnee's not been at his best this season, but you know, he's the one competitive player that we have in the middle of the park. And we're now gonna go into the game probably with an undercooked Dante Polvara and Conor Bannon and Leighton Clarkson, who neither of whom have been, you know, putting in scintillating performances. Killian Phillips did well against Celtic when he played from the start, but we've not seen much of Killian Phillips since then.
I think he's been struggling about the injury, to be fair.
Yeah, sounds about right. I honestly don't know the best way to approach this game with the people that we have. You take that information of the teams that have played well against them, but it doesn't really matter because we don't have battering ram strikers, and we have shown over the course of a season, especially domestically, that we don't have the discipline and ability to maintain a shape for 90 minutes. So truthfully, people might think this is me being negative, but I think we're going to need a little bit of a minor miracle to win this game.
Yeah, I was just looking. Gerald Eiffel didn't appear in any of those two semifinals you were thinking about.
No, so. Now I think about it, yeah, I'm sure Craig Brown did, like, the first thing, they had one training session and said Gerald was subpar when it came to the old football, and he was punted back down south.
Vujadinovic played in both.
Vujadinovic got hooked after about half an hour in one of them.
He did, you're right. It was the first one. Yeah,
that one Chris Commons scored on his Celtic debut.
Yeah, he just fucking lobbed Jamie Langfield from like 60 yards from
the fucking touchline.
Fuck me.
Is that also the game when, who was the referee once who sends off Cotsett there?
No, that was the Scottish Cup semi.
Who was the referee that day?
I'm away to look it up, but I'm absolutely certain it's Willie Collum. Before I look it up, it's Willie Collum.
It is Willie Collum. When was that?
What was that?
When was that game? That feels like a lifetime ago.
Nearly 13 years ago, the 17th of April.
When Willie Collum was just a spring chicken.
Yeah.
Jeez, oh.
Apparently it was 18 minutes into the game, that red card. I remember that being way earlier in the game.
I think that's just how the game felt.
Somehow we went in at that game. Somehow we were at 0-0 at halftime.
Well, yeah, because Langfield saves, like Stokes took the penalty. Yeah. Langfield saved it, and then they scored very early in the second half. Yeah. I think Charlie Mulgrew gets the first goal that day.
Yeah, Mulgrew, Ledley.
It was a free kick.
No, fuck off.
It was a free, really. There are some things that are just burnt into my memory. And whenever Shai Mulgrew scored against us is one of those things.
Listen to the starting lineup that day, by the way.
Okay, I think Langfield in goal.
Yeah.
Vujadinovic.
Actually, Vujadinovic came on for someone.
All right. So I'm guessing like McArdle would have been about.
No.
Diamond?
Yeah.
Was Foster on loan at the time?
Well, he wasn't the team, so possibly.
Foster. God almighty. Stephen Smith, I'm sure, started.
Yeah, he did, yeah.
In the middle, Christ almighty. You know what? I've actually blanked out this team. Like Gavin Ray? Stephen Hughes?
No.
Go ahead. Put me on the misery.
This is the starting lineup. Langfield, Derek Young, Xander Diamond, Andy Considine, Stephen Smith, Josh McGuinness, who was replaced by Nick Blackman, Ryan Jack, Rob Milsom, Sonny Aluko. I don't even remember Aluko still being here at this point. Chris Maguire, Scott Vernon. Vernon replaced by Michael Payton with 20 minutes remaining. And then, yeah, Vujadinovic came on for Derek Young with 25 minutes to go. So.
Yeah,
I can't for the life of me
shore things up.
I can't for the life of me think how we got beat by 4-0 in that game. So yeah, okay. That we totally digress. Just
anything to not talk about this Saturday.
I know. Yeah, it's gonna be interesting. I'm intrigued to see whether or not people at the club. I mean, leaving would have been around obviously at the point of the League Cup final, and if people have at least recognised that. Having a manager A come out and say that, you know, we're not good enough to even think about basically having a fucking go in a game like this is probably not a good thing. And actually also setting up not to have a go is also not going to get you any credit in the bank. I just want to see us actually go and have a fucking go at a team, to be honest, right now, because I don't think we're not good enough defensively to sit in and try and defend and try and hold out and try and get to penalty kicks. So what the fuck's the point in trying to pretend to try and do that? You might as well go and have a fucking go at them. Like, it's a cup semi-final, for fuck's sake.
Well, I mean, that as well. And our game plan is to get to penalties, unless Ross Doohan is some kind of penalty kick master, then we're not going to come out on top with that either. Attack is the best form of defense, in my view. But even when saying that, I'm saying that with very little conviction in my voice, and there's a reason behind it. It'll be a very difficult game. I mean, you might want to say that the board will take the view that a manager coming out and saying that we can't go and command a game in Glasgow against one of the Old Firm, but let's not forget they were all celebrating this up until very recently. So I don't think that is the attitude. I think Peter Leaven will have a different mentality just based on the way that he's spoken about the players and trying to convince them that, you know, they're good players and they can do good things. But we're going to need literally every single player in red that day putting in their best performance of the season by a distance, and will still need Celtic to have a bit of an off day. I'm not looking forward to this.
No. Okay. Predictions?
4-0 Aberdeen.
There we go. Love it. I love every time we do this. As negative as it can be, we'll still somehow predict we're going to win. I'm going to say Celtic 1, Aberdeen 2. Somehow we wangle our way into a second cup final this season, where we will play Sevco, because Hearts, you were grimacing earlier on at the stats about Aberdeen and Celtic earlier on. Hearts have never beaten either iteration of Rangers at Hampden in their history.
Never know, though.
Yeah, don't see it happening.
Jokes aside, I think my prediction will actually be 1-1 going into extra time, and we'll get a late winner through a returning Esther Sokler.
Oh, nice. Love it. Good stuff. Right. Let's see if we're right then. Next week, will that do us, Gav? I think it will. How much have you had to drink this evening?
One alcohol-free beer.
Excellent. There we go. That'll do us. That'll wrap up this week's episode of the ABZ Football Podcast. Thanks for joining us. Please remember to like, subscribe, follow, whatever you do on your podcast player of choice. Join us next time, which will either be that episode sitting in the can about Jimmy Tilleen, or it'll be episode 166, where we'll look back on the Scottish Cup semi-final victory against Celtic, and then we'll look ahead to our first post-split fixture against whoever it is that the fixture computer decides to throw at us over the next week or so. We'll look forward to seeing you then. Stand free.
This episode of the ABZ Football Podcast was brought to you in association with Siberia Bar and Hotel on Belmont Street, Aberdeen. Head into the bar, quote the phrase ABZ Pod, that's ABZ Pod, for a £3 pint of Foster's, £4 pint of Moretti, or £5 pint of Fierce any day of the week, including match days. Siberia is open 7 days a week, all year round, and the bar is located only 30 seconds walk from the nearest bus stop, taking supporters to Dodger Stadium for free on match days. Come on, you Reds.